Is Data a blessing or a curse? Brought to you by Adastra, this is a must-listen podcast that inspires and advises people who are serious about digitalization. He has a dream, and he's working to make it a reality. He wants to create a world where business delivers real value without relying on IT. How? By democratizing the data and creating a data mesh. Lukáš Mazánek, Chief Data Officer of Raiffeisen Bank Czech Republic. Welcome to the show, Lukáš.
Thank you for having me.
Raiffeisen Bank has an architecture vision called 2035. Can you share more details with us what the vision is about?
I certainly can. 2035, it's a long time, right? Okay, that is a reason why it is in such a long-term vision. It's because we believe it is deep structural change, and we want that everybody understand it, even from the name. So thus 2035 gives us enough time to do such a change. And the change is towards autonomy of the business and delivering a new value through the data and technology around the data mesh.
If you are talking about autonomy of the business, you mean autonomy exactly without relying on IT, which I was talking at the beginning about?
Not really. Actually, I'm talking about autonomy of the business as a business domain. So the business should be able to deliver the business value end to end. So it is autonomous with all necessary roles and technologies inside the business domain. And the challenge is to connect such autonomous parts of a company together to deliver one unified product as a bank.
Product as a bank?
Well, I mean the product within the rules of the bank.
You are responsible for the data strategy specifically.
Yeah.
You want to create a data mesh. You want to democratize the data inside the Raiffeisen Bank. You often and like to work with terms like semantic layer.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain to the audience what semantic layer is about and why it's so important for data mesh and data democratization?
I'd love to. It's my pet idea, actually, lately. So I'm thinking a lot about it. Okay. First, maybe a short description of the problem we are dealing with. Our company, our enterprise, is growing bigger and bigger and more complex. Basically, when you have complex environment and you add new application, then it is not creating plus one bigger problem, actually, because there are association between all applications and systems. So adding one system can generate a really bigger growth of the problem. So
you mean that the exponentiality growth?
Exactly. It's like we have like 350 applications and systems around, something like that. And if you add one more, it's not 351, because there are association between all applications, mainly the integration. And integration, it is like 35 to 60% of expenditures in IT. So adding one more application can generate hundreds of new data integration. And so the problem is growing much faster. And each such system usually is a silo. So there is locked data within the application, and the data has a different meaning within the application. It's like the most simplest example would be, For example, customer name, which sounds pretty obvious, but in some countries you have third name. And where will you put this name when you have only two attributes, first name and last name? Well, it differs application to application. Some will put it in the first name, some will put it in the last name, and all of a sudden the meaning of the attribute is changed. And this is very basic example. It's much more complex, obviously, in banking industry. So you need, if you want everyone to have an easy access to the data of overall enterprise, you need to create some kind of layer which will gives you the unified meaning of the data and information.
Is it similar to what we call data catalog?
Well, data catalog is, I would say, the beginning. It's like a data catalog gives you the information what attributes you have all around the organization and where these attributes are located. But you need also define the meaning of the attributes. And basically, each attribute represent, let's say, concept. And now we need to be really careful about words we are working with. Concept doesn't mean object. So if I say a chair, I have in my mind some concept. Basically, it can be four-legged chair, three-legged chair, one-legged chair. It can be white, black, whatever. That's a concept. It's not the actual chair. And it is same in IT. So each attribute represents some kind of concept.
And so what you are talking about is that you need to describe the concept carefully. So each one has the same like picture or image of the chair in his head, and all the chairs are the same, right?
Well, all the chairs aren't same, actually, but the concept is same. So if I will say we will move chairs from the room, then I don't really have to know how the chair looks like. I will go to the room, I will see something which looks like a chair, then I grab it and move it somewhere else. And this is the idea. So basically, we need to say, okay, this attribute represents this concept. And then we need to say what the concept mean. Mm-hmm. And the concept changes its meaning based on context. And context is given by domain, business domain.
Okay.
And we are back in autonomy. So first we need to carefully split the organization into business domains, because within these business domains we have a context, and the context gives the meaning to the concept. And so we need to give the tool to the employees to define their concepts within their context. It's like when you try to define some business term and you invite all important people from all company saying, okay, guys, define who is your customer. Well, you will never reach agreement, right? Because for a retail and for corporate, the customer is someone completely different. It's a physical person or legal entity, right? It's the complete different definition. But on conceptual level, it's a customer. They will understand. If somebody from corporate says, okay, give me all your customers to the retail, well, both they understand what he or she is going to get. So so we need to define concepts for all attributes and create a business glossary. So all of a sudden we have defined concepts on a business domain level, and now we can understand what each data means in the given domain. And okay, well, these tools are available for multiple years, so that's nothing new. But what's new is coming of knowledge graphs. because knowledge graph is something which can visualize concepts and their relationships between each other. And it's really easy to understand visualization because you can see the concept and the relationship right before your eyes, and the implications are obvious all of a sudden. So semantic layer is something which provides easy, understandable, and accessible layer to all the data within the enterprise. So basically, all of a sudden, you don't need to understand every particular system to get the data or information from the system. All of a sudden, you can write your select or ask your question to the semantic layer, and you will get your answer right away. So it is like paradigm shift, I would say. And the another reason why it's good to have a semantic layer is artificial intelligence, because artificial intelligence is something which can improve our efficiency. It can make decisions for us whenever it makes sense and automate processes and things. But if we want AI act in such a way, we need to give to the AI knowledge, not the data. And the difference between data and knowledge is you need to provide the context, meaning, experience, and some other important metadata. So if you enrich your data with the metadata and put it in the semantic layer, then all of a sudden you can train automatically your AI to provide you with some automatization decisions or even summaries. So I'm sorry for this long answer, but it is necessary.
And does it mean that you've already started to bringing this vision to life, right?
We definitely are working on this for multiple years, but we started small. We started with data catalog, business glossary. We are making some proof of concepts to knowledge graphs and semantic layer.
And which business domain did you choose as the first ones?
That is a very good question. Actually, I'm waiting because we are in the middle of agile transformation. So right now we are building our first business domains. So I will use this domain as an example. But for example, our investment is working for quite a significant amount of time as a business domain. It's not officially a business domain, but it acts as it. And we are right now preparing the proof of concept in the data mesh field. And I need to maybe clarify the connection between semantic layer and the data mesh, because data mesh is not only about the sharing the data, but it's also about data products. And data product mean something which is standardized. And this standardization comes from understanding of the data and the meaning of the data. And you are back at the semantic layer. So it is closely connected.
It's not only about the semantic layer and understanding what the data are about the context and concept, as you were talking about, but also from my perspective, the challenge is to keep the proper data governance in each of the domains created, right?
Yes. Well, first, it is really important the way how you are going to create the business domain. We used domain-driven design by Eric Evans as a methodology. And basically, he states that a business domain is a sphere of influence and knowledge or acts. And This is important because, yes, you can transform your organization from a management point of view. You basically draw some lines and say, okay, this is business domain. But if this business domain hasn't influence, has knowledge, or doesn't act like a business domain, it's not business domain. You can have it in an org chart. It can have some manager, but still, it's not business domain. Business domain needs to act like business domain. And when you do it properly, then you will get the context. And
so it's from bottom up.
Well, it manifests itself. Actually, you just. I heard that in our retail department they had a big gathering and they were improving or thinking how to improve the way they work, and what came from this workshop was that they decided to change the organization to the daily banking payments and some other. And all of a sudden, you can see that the business domain evolved by itself, because it was always there. People were acting like the domain exists. It was just hidden in the organization. So it is really important how you create your business domain. And if you do it properly, it will help you because it gives the context to the data. And now I would like to help our business to represent or display their business using conceptual language. It's described as a business knowledge blueprints in the book by Mr. Ross. So. And that this is very easy way how to describe. And again, you are back at a concept. You basically say, okay, we have a customer and he has a product, and there is some relationship or whatever. And in this way, you can describe like whole environment or conceptual environment of the domain. And if you use such an approach and you connected it with the semantic layer or business glossary and data dictionary, all of a sudden you make everyone outside your domain to understand what it means. And being said this, I try to come back to your original question.
Yeah, data governance.
Okay. Our approach is to let the domain to do within the domain whatever they need, because they are PNL responsible. So it can have some reason why not to do it properly or correctly from our point of view. It's a business. Sometimes it makes sense to do something quick and dirty just to generate the profit. So whatever happens in the business domain, it's in business domain. But once it crosses the border of the business domain, and now you can see why it is so important to have correctly defined the business domain, then federative governance is applied. And federative governance, from my point of view, first, I believe in something as a governance as a code. So maybe we will touch this in data mesh later, because it should be part of data product. Basically, the data product says these are rules. You can work with this data product. If you don't comply, you simply cannot. So the federative data governance, from my point of view, should be automated and should be standardized. So we would like to define some top-level ontology to put all definitions within domains together. And now I should probably define ontology. Okay, ontology. And I'm sorry for this word. Nobody likes it, but I do. It's actually a very old word.
You like a lot of words: semantic layer, Polish graph, ontology. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, but it helps me to communicate. And okay, ontology is actually a very old part of philosophy, and it basically defines the things and relations between them. And so basically top level ontology says what things we have in organization and what are their relationships. And good thing is that actually somebody did this work for us. There are open ontologies you can rely on, like, for example, FIBO, which is Financial Industry Business Ontology. And basically you can find a definition of pretty much every concept in the financial industry. It's not everything, so you will have to extend the ontology to your needs. But when you do that, it's like standard, and then you can every domain can associate to this ontology. So basically, you can do whatever you want within your domain. But once you cross the border, you need to link the concept to the top level ontology, and all of a sudden, all business domains understands each other.
But crossing the border, mm-hmm. this happens each time when anybody else outside your domain needs your data from the specific domain,
yeah,
right?
That's right. That's right.
So it's most of the use cases.
Actually, it depends on the industry. It's like in banking on or heavily regulated industries, it will be most of the cases, actually. But there are industries where pretty much happens within the domain and a little bit is shared across. This is the moment where the data mesh comes handy, actually, because this is the way how to share and organize the data within the domain, so in a decentralized environment. And it is also scalable. And the reason why it is possible is because we have domain ownership, as we talked about before. We have a data product, which is like package of the data with all metadata necessary, like the how it should be fresh, how often it should be delivered, the policies of the data, security requirements, whatever. This is connected and packaged all together to the data product. And then we have, and that is extremely important, we need to have self-service platform. It's basically, if we want to be autonomous, we need to provide some kind of self-service, because we don't really want every business domain to create everything from the scratch. First, because it would be
a mess instead of mesh.
Yeah, but also it would be too expensive. It doesn't really make sense to implement security measures 8 times, right? Like why? You can do it once. So you need to provide a self-service layer which will resolve all this necessary and boring compliance and IT stuff for you, so the business can focus on their goal. So in my data strategy, I describe it as a robot assembly line. It's a place where the business arrives and everything is ready and shiny and working out, and they just say, okay, all of a sudden we want to create a red car instead of a white, and that's it. It's a business idea, and we can right away start the production. So self-service, and we have also the fourth one, which is federative governance, but we have touched this before. So,
can you give me an example of data products or specific data product?
For example, sales. It's like if we would like to create, let's say, a machine learning model to analyze the transactions of the given customer, then it would be handy to have obviously the transactions. So in the retail business domain, where the business happens, the transactions of the given customers are captured, and these transactions are packaged together with the policies, like, for example, who can read the transaction, or GDPR regulations, or requirements for freshness of data or whatever. So it is packaged and it is provided usually as a service to the other business domain, and also it is registered to so-called marketplace. So all of a sudden, everybody in the company can see that the data package, data product, sales, or it would be probably called something like all transactions of a retail customer or something like that, because the name of the product should be descriptive. You should understand what's in the package right away. So it will be provided into the marketplace, and then everybody can come and get it.
If I understand it well, so mm-hmm. I can come to the marketplace, mm-hmm. ask for the, for example, transactions data from mm-hmm. retail customers, mm-hmm. of retail customers, and mm-hmm. I can ask those data a lot of questions I'm interested in, for example, from marketing perspective, right? To build better right. strategy. This is definitely. What a data product should
definitely.
Be.
Definitely. Usually, customers of marketplace are data scientists. So you can do all kinds of the magic they do, but also it can be a financial officer or a risk manager or somebody like that to use the data for, I don't know, detecting fraudulent behavior or just computing the financial position of the customer.
So yeah, but if I come from different business domain, I'm able to ask, not simple, but in a simpler way, questions to that data product and get my answers I'm interested in.
What you will get is a package of the data. So what happens with this package is a little bit on you. So you probably need to load it in some kind of application or maybe just Excel.
But of course.
But then you can do whatever you want with the package of the data. Because, again, we are back at the meaning of the data semantic layer, because these data, you know what it means, because every attribute is defined. You can go to the definition, you can read what it means, how should it be used, and then you can do whatever you need to do. You can even create a new pipeline saying, okay, I'm reading this data regularly, every hour, every day, every whatever, and you can build your application based on this pipeline. So it really depends on you. What's new in this is the decoupling part, because now not all data are stored in same place. So if there is a outage of some system and the data are available from the provider, then still all consumers can consume the data, right? But if you have everything in one place and then there is an outage, it's outage for everyone. So this is the concept of decentralization. So I believe, okay, not every approach is good for every problem. So there are problems which should be dealt with centralized solutions and some with decentralized. The data mesh is for complex and big organization. So if you have quite simple business with relatively small system complexity, then data mesh probably is not for you. It's like, okay, if you have three systems and one is main and it's not very big and everybody understands, okay, why to build data mesh? If you have hundreds of systems and nobody really knows what it means, then yes, there is a need for data mesh.
I'm talking about one place where all the data should be stored to be available to all business domains within the organization. How does it come together with Microsoft Fabric concept? Because I think Microsoft Fabric should help a lot with going ahead with the data mesh concept.
Yeah, that's an excellent question, actually, because Data Fabric goes perfectly with data mesh. Because what I described before, the layer where the data are mapped to data catalog and business glossary and semantic layer, you don't really want to do it manually, because this is such a huge problem that I wouldn't even believe it is possible to do it manually. So you need to employ some kind of artificial intelligence. And so basically the data catalog, we can name it as a augmented data catalog, because usually in every organization, you have some place where the most metadata are concentrated. In our organization, it is data warehouse. In our data warehouse, we have, I would say, like 80% of all data of a whole enterprise, and it's very well documented. So in our case, we are going to train a large language model on top of this data and metadata, and then we can find similarities in other systems and enrich the data with the metadata from this model. And this is the way how we will populate the data dictionary, and we can also use artificial intelligence to help us with the definition of the concepts. Because if we have top-level ontology, we can train the artificial intelligence to look for similarities in definitions, and then we can also populate the business glossary and semantic layer. So data mesh is like technology. It's really the tool how to do it. The data mesh is more like organization and methodology point of view. So these two goes perfectly together.
Okay, but you need some kind of maturity of your business people and also your IT people to be able to work with that together, okay?
That's right. But okay, and that's very good question, because I believe that one of main goals of IT is to remove these obstacles. It's like, because actually it's called cognitive load. It measures what you need to know to be able to do your task. And we don't want that every our customer is a data analyst or data scientist.
And the customers, you mean?
Internal customers. I'm sorry. I'm just speaking from the position of IT. So what IT needs to do is to create such an environment where these obstacles are removed. It's hidden behind some automatic rules and applications. For example, right now we are making POC on a tool for data business glossary and data dictionary, and this tool has this feature that you can create your own application as a simple configuration based on the metadata defined in this application. And so basically, if you define all your concepts and relations, and you say where the data lies in data catalog, and you do it in this application, then you can say, okay, create me an application on these concepts, and then the front end is generated. You can right away input your data, but now the data are captured with the metadata, because now the fields are connected with the concepts and relations. So from the point of view of the user, nothing really changed, because he or she still inputs the data, but since we did this change, all of a sudden also metadata are captured. So I believe that this is one of important tasks of IT, lower the cognitive load.
Do you believe that you will be able to achieve that by 2035?
I believe we will achieve that much sooner in some selected parts, and I believe this is the correct approach. I don't believe in huge transformation projects which will create completely different organization within 10 years. It's like it's too ambitious.
Okay, so yeah, going step by step, creating some kind of evolution
incrementally,
inside the bank.
Yeah, because these are new approaches, new methodologies. For example, data mesh was defined 2019 by Jean-Marc Digani. So 2019, right? It's very new. So we need to be very careful, and we should start slowly. We should start small, and we should scale up. And okay, so my goal after we set up the environment, my first goal would be okay, let's capture the new data in the new way. Not change all the organization, but let's not worsen the situation. So I don't know, maybe it doesn't sound too ambitious, but I believe this is the right way.
What are the main challenges you expect to meet, or you expect to need to be overcome?
Okay, this is cultural change, actually, because we are living in the world of application first. When you come in any meeting, when they are creating some new product or something like that, they are talking about behavior of the application. It's like how it will be react on this situation, or where will be the button. But almost never you can hear discussion about the data, but the paradigm is shifting, and it's shifting right now. I'm reading the great book. It's called Data Centric Revolution. I really recommend. And there are situations described why this change is difficult. For example, There was a Hungarian doctor in like 19th century who knew that there is a correlation between the afterbirth troubles and the hygiene. And he proved it, because he changed the situation in the hospital and these problems improved. But he was ridiculed, and he ended up in the mental hospital, and he died, and he never saw his finding to get in the reality. It's so we as a humanity, we knew there was a proof, but still we didn't change, because for people, it's easy to continue with the knowledge or situation on environment as they know. And if the paradigm shift is required, well, that's really, really difficult. And people were dying because of this. And still they, for example, there were like sailors and they had this disease because of the lack of vitamin C. And they made an experiment with the lemon juice, and these problems disappeared. And still, I think it took like 50, maybe 100 years before they took the lemon juice together on the boat, and people were dying. They knew it, and they were still dying. So okay, the biggest obstacle would be the culture. It's culture change because data-centric thinking is completely different. It's like the idea behind it is, okay, let's take best care about the data. Let's have one unified meaning of the data, one model. And I don't really think the canonical model, I mean, one model for the organization, then build as simple applications as possible so we can toss them away. Because that's exactly what is happening, and it's happening every day. I'm always surprised. It's like it's so obvious because if you work in some corporation, you probably witnessed the situation where old system was replaced with the new one, right? But when the system is replaced, it's not like that every data is deleted and you will start from scratch. No, the new application is installed and every data is migrated inside. But still, nobody cares about the data. They care
about it.
Yeah,
it works in a different way. Yeah. You need to spend more time to leverage all the new functions and features.
Yeah. So it's cultural change, and it won't be easy. It won't be easy. This is the biggest obstacle. So it's not technology. It's not methodology. We have, I would say, we have everything we need. We just need convince people this is the right way, and we need them to help us. It's like we need this network effect. It's the data governance lately when I have speeches somewhere, my first question to the auditorium is, who thinks that the data governance is sexy? And lately, there are people who are raising their hands and thinking that's sexy.
Who are they?
Sometimes they are even from business and IT, because people can see it more and more. So I believe that this change will happen, but this. In every organization, you have some data management team which enforce the data governance. But that's a few people. And it's like thousands of people are making data, and a few people should enforce the government. It won't work. So what we need is a network effect. And so we need to convince every employee that the data is asset. And I'm sorry for this phrase, because nobody, you know, I think nobody really understands what it means. It's like the data as an asset means that's all, it's important. You really need, and then every employee need to work with the data in such a manner as it is most precious asset of the company. So again, it's culture change.
Lukáš Mazánek, Chief Data Officer of Raiffeisen Bank Czech Republic. Lukáš, thanks for being with me in the studio. Thanks for sharing your interesting insights.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
Follow the Adastra Digital website on LinkedIn, Facebook, and most importantly, subscribe to this podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or Google. This is Iva Karhanová from Adastra, signing off.